Hello and welcome to another edition of Turn Out a Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved in punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, one of my favorite people in the world. I love this dude. I love this dude so much. Brandon Williams of the band Chastity is on the show today, a band that I've toured with, a band that put out some of my favorite records and has a brand new record. More on that in 1 second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can head over to the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. There's also a Facebook page and an Instagram, and all that stuff is run by my brother and show producer and just workhorse extraordinaire, like the real shit worker of this show, like in the old sense of the Maximum Rock and Roll shit workers. Tristan's doing all the shit work to make this podcast happen. So thank you so much, Tristan, for all that work. So you can get in touch with him in there. If you're looking to get in touch with me directly, you can find me on various forms of social media where I am at Left for Damien. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do that is just by telling all your friends about this podcast, letting everyone know that you like this thing and that we're doing this thing out there. You can also subscribe to it and rate it on your listening platform of choice. And there's also a Patreon, and I got to give a huge, huge thank you, bless you to the long-suffering supporters of the Turn Out a Punk Patreon, people that really keep this thing going, people that have allowed me to get this new computer because the old computer died and we would have had to stop the show. So much love to the people at Patreon for all their support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you'd like to, I think that's it. I think I'm done for plugs. Right now, I am in a hotel room in rainy Brisbane, Australia. You might be able to hear the rain hitting the window outside. Gives you a nice, I'm setting it up for you, letting you know what I'm dealing with right now. But the view is incredible. I'm looking at a racetrack. I'm having a lot of fun over here in Australia on tour, buying a lot of records. Shout out to Junk Shop Dog for hooking me up with some incredible Japanese wrestling toys, and huge, huge, huge thank you and love to the people at Vicious Sloth, who every time a fucked up guest to come to town, Joan and I go down there and just learn, and Licorice Pie, and just there's a lot of amazing record stores here. I'm learning so much. I'm learning about so many different little sub scenes. Australia truly is like the an entire protected ecosystem of punk rock. Like, there's just so much incredible stuff that comes from here. And then I'm going to New Zealand, where I'm going to be learning about Flying Nun stuff. And I guess I'm also playing shows, but for me, this is really like an educational trip. Like, that's what I really do this for. Like, the show, I do play these shows once in a while, but for the most part, I'm just learning. I'm just soaking it in like a sponge. We had a driver today, Kerry, and he used to roadie for AC/DC and Rose Tattoo, and told us some wild stories from back in the day. So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. Long story short, I'm having a lot of fun out here in Australia. And that's why this show, I promised it would come out a little bit earlier in the week, and I had to delay it because, well, travel and all that kind of stuff. But here it is. And this is a fantastic conversation with someone who I have unbelievable amounts of respect for. Brandon is someone I met first a few years ago, fucked up, played a show in San Francisco, and Chastity opened. And I met him at that show. And since then, gotten to know him a little bit. We went on tour together in Europe. And he's just one of the most earnest, thoughtful people I've ever had the chance to meet. And I think that really comes across in this interview. There's a lot of cool stuff. And this might be one of the most honest discussions we've had on the show. You know, not that we haven't had other honest discussions, but I mean just in terms of like music and criticism and that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to blather on anymore. I'm going to let you sit back, relax, and enjoy Brandon Williams of the band Chastity on Turned Out a Punk. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is finally happening. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this happening for like years.
I think so, yeah. And then I think we almost did it in Hamburg or in Germany somewhere.
Yep.
And then we were like, let's wait. We'll do it at home.
We'll do it at home. Yeah. I'm glad we waited, too, because now I got my dab rig in Germany. I just had shitty German weed, so you're going to get a much more animated host.
Nice.
You know, I think it'd be better for you.
Nice.
But I think it's even been longer than that, because I remember, your record being one of my albums of the year and talking about it then, but I guess it just hasn't happened till now.
Yeah. Well, dude, thank you for making it happen now.
Oh, yeah, please. You came over for dinner, you know?
Dude, like, thank you for dinner. Yo, yeah. No, chicken was sick.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was okay. So good. And those buns were fire, too.
And what would have happened if I had made a terrible dinner and then you had to sit through looking at
me? I would have done that. I would have been like, yo, this is fire, too. But this is legitimately.
Okay, well, now I don't know which is truth and what's a lie. But I got to start this off the way they all start off, which is, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the genre?
Yeah, I think I sort of came in sort of a back way, maybe by way of metal. And I think in elementary school, I remember kids, you know, starting to get into Iron Maiden or like Pantera or something. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really for me directly. And I think I was just like, okay, where do I, you know what I mean, what is for me then? And I kind of started looking then, you know, and so I went to C.E. Broughton Public School for elementary school, and just up the hill from there was Anderson Collegiate, and there's always sort of this like mystery of Protest the Hero, because they went there when I was in elementary school, and they were like sort of like a skate punk.
They were a ska band when they first came out.
Yeah, Happy Go Lucky. Yeah,
and they had a different name too. Even I think
it was called Happy Go Lucky.
Well, that was called Happy Go Lucky.
Yeah,
I thought you meant there was like they were like a Happy Go Lucky skate band. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well that's
they're
exactly
literally called Happy Go Lucky. So, but then they put out like a demo, and I was just sort of like, whoa! It was sort of just like it was literally up the hill, 300 meters away, you know. And I just remember like kind of looking up and just seeing some kids like in trench coats or whatever, and just like in like they're like steel toed boots, and just being like, oh shit, you know, just sort of like blowing my mind, this different, this like high school world or whatever. And I started doing as much digging as I could, and I think I started to sort of find, by way of Protest the Hero, in grade 7 I went to, it was Protest the Hero and Bombs Over Providence and Closet Monster.
That makes sense.
Kind of the, yeah, like, the underground operations.
Yeah, the UOC.
Yeah, but it was at the Polish Hall in Oshawa, and I remember watching like a kid in all like camo get up, like get in a fist fight with a kid with long hair. You know what I mean? It was like just sort of this like this. I like witnessed this like punk versus like metal thing. I was like, whoa! I didn't even know. I kind of even now I'm like, whoa! What was it happening?
Yeah,
yeah. But it,
and especially at that show. It's like, who's calling someone a poser there?
Yeah, you know? Straight up. Yeah, it was, like, outside of the Polish Hall.
Yeah.
Like, just on, I think, on Simcoe Street in Oshawa. But that was, like, that was kind of my, I mean, I remember, too, my baby, a babysitter. This is, like, one of my maybe, like, earliest memories. I remember crossing the street in Whitby, on Dundas Street in Whitby, because a group of kids, like, in steel-toed boots and, like, shaved heads or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We're walking on the same side, and my babysitter crossed the street, and I was like, I think I was like, what happened? You know, who are they?
Yeah,
and like, what is that? You know? So I think that was kind of my way in a little. I mean, I remember hearing like when I was in grade 7 or 8, like Between the Buried and Me or something, like some more metal shit that I was like pretty blown away with, but I just didn't fuck with some of the other, like, all my like skateboarder friends or whatever were into like you know what I mean, Iron Maiden and whatever, and I just started looking and started like, it was kind of like I had I forget what the service, Kazaa, you know, remember Kazaa, like the file sharing, and I would search, you know, I think this is how I found Refused or something. I would just search like
punk
or whatever, and then it would come
hardcore,
up.
Hardcore,
and then I would read what I could. It was sort of, I would just read what I could at that point about these bands, and I think I just found, like, I was like, well, what is, like, straight edge? Like, hearing, you know what I mean? It was just all by way of internet, kind of, because I wasn't really involved in any. I grew up in Whitby or whatever, and I went to the Polish Hall sometimes, and hadn't really been to the Dungeon tons, so I was just finding out about tons of stuff, just almost just like reading about it as much as I could online and just like after school and whatever. And I had this friend, Adam McMillan, that showed me a bunch of bands after that. But yeah, that's kind of how it got going, I guess. And yeah.
The Eastern sort of city suburb area had like a lot of bands around that time, like Mark Inside, like Anagram, like,
yeah,
and then of course like, you know, Protest the Hero and stuff, like stuff was really popping off.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I remember, yeah, I started going to the Dungeon probably in grade 10 or something. I wasn't allowed to go to the Dungeon. You know, like, it's called the Dungeon. The previous owner had gone to jail, I think, for selling ecstasy to minors. And then this amazing guy, Will, bought the business and yeah, kept it going and everything, and painted the walls, cleaned up the bathrooms. The bathrooms were insane.
Did it have a cage that could go in front of the stage?
I think maybe that was the previous.
Yeah. Owner. I think I saw Propagandhi play there.
Crazy.
Oh. With Closet Monster.
Oh, true.
When it was like the early incarnation of Closet Monster.
Wow.
It might have been pre-Closet Monster, actually.
Crazy.
But yeah, no, I definitely remember that venue.
Yeah, yeah. But it, to us, like, I met, like, I was just up north with this guy, Grizzly, and Grizzly, I met him out front of the Dungeon, I remember, and there's, like, a lot of friends today I still have. We met at the Dungeon and went to shows at the Dungeon, mm-hmm, or whatever, you know, so, but it was, I was just then, once I started going to the Dungeon, then it was, like, I was kind of, that time for me was kind of like this, like, there's sort of a lot of like MySpace, like metal, like metallic hardcore type of stuff going on. And that was like the huge tide that I think when I started, there was like, I don't know if you remember, like the Holly Springs Disaster, mm-hmm, was like, there's like stuff like that a lot coming through. But
yeah. Were those bands playing also, locally too?
They were playing in Oshawa. Yeah. Okay. They were, I think they were from like Saskatchewan or something, but there were bands like touring off their MySpace.
Were they on Underground Operations too? Holly Springs Disaster or something?
I think maybe, yeah. Yeah, actually, I bet. That would make sense.
It was kind of, they put out a lot of bands for like that brief period that they were around.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it was, I Hate Sally.
I Hate Sally was another one.
They ruled. I thought they were nuts live. I saw them a few times at the Dungeon. Mm-hmm. And
were they from Oshawa? No, they were from,
they're from either Kingston or Belleville. Okay,
yeah, Kingston. I think it's Kingston. Yeah. One of the few bands from Kingston.
Yeah, seriously.
It's weird how that's like, you know, obviously the biggest Canadian band ever is from there, but
yeah.
But
yeah,
like, yeah, really, it's not like, you know, there's like so many, you know, other cities that have put out so many more bands than,
seriously,
you'd think Kingston would put out more bands.
I wonder. Yeah. I wonder if it's so, yeah, I feel this sort of, I wonder about Whitby right now, like with, and Durham, with just like lack of any infrastructure to,
mm-hmm,
rehearse even, mm-hmm, for bands and to play, you know. And I wonder if Kingston, I mean, it's like a college city, it's obviously, yeah, Queens and whatever, but I wonder about the, like, did you guys go out and play Kingston?
Like, we played Kingston a couple times.
Yeah,
yeah, like, it's, and they've always been fun shows, but yeah, like, it's not like we've ever played with a band there, you know, that we end up playing with years later, you know, yeah, like, or I find a lot of the kids we play to end up seeing them in other cities they move to, right, and stuff. Like, maybe it's because it is like a temporary population.
Yes.
Between the school, the prison, and just kids growing up there.
Yes, seriously, yeah, true. Yeah, I wonder, there are shows in Coburg.
Yeah.
At the hall.
Like, yeah, and a lot of bands came out of Coburg.
Yeah.
A lot of people from bands came out of Coburg,
too. Did you hear the band Coburg? There's,
no,
a band called Coburg. I want to start a band called Whitby. I'm trying to convince my friends. I just have a few songs for the band Whitby.
But like,
Coburg was sick.
The band's name from the city always suck.
Yeah, but Coburg was, right, sick.
Like,
was,
yeah, Coburg, yeah, sick? Because I was going to say,
maybe
like,
Whitby, though. I'm risking it. I'm risking
that,
it.
That Boston's not really my thing.
Right.
Toronto, the band's not good.
No.
Tirana, though, the band is really good.
I haven't heard.
Tirana.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good.
I'll check it.
But, and O-Town sucks. From from Orlando.
Mm.
So
was Chicago from Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they got some songs, Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, there's no New York band. It'd be a pretty big thing to take on being
the
New York.
The Bronx are from
California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit, I forget.
Yeah. Then they're not. Yeah, I like the Bronx. So there's there are bands, but like, you know, it's a big thing to take on.
It is.
You know, you want to carry the whole city on your back like that?
Yeah, maybe not. They wake me.
Good luck.
Cheers, yeah. I just emailed the mayor in Whitby, like on Friday. We had that last barn show.
Yeah.
I was like, come through. I know he knows about them or whatever.
Yeah.
He was talking to someone about them, but I've kind of been posting Ben Rayner.
Yeah. Like, the homie.
Toronto Star, yeah.
To avoid confusion, not Ben Rayner, the photographer, Ben Rayner, the writer.
Yes, yeah. Which
both are both good friends. Mm. I love them both dearly, but I'm sure they both get confused for one another a lot by publicists. Google
search, yeah. But he wrote a piece about Oshawa and sort of an infrastructure-less city with talent, or just with like artists coming out of it there, and Daniel Caesar and... I've heard this, it's a pop band called Dizzy, just did, they just wanted Juno and stuff out of their bedrooms in Oshawa, but he's like, yeah, there's no venue, and anyway, I posted a link to that and tagged Don Mitchell, Mayor Don Mitchell in Whitby, and, but I emailed him, and he's like, can you put together a plan and come see me, we're just, like, figuring out culture budget shit right now. I was like, I was expecting much more resistance, and I've experienced... you know, resistance and being largely just like swimming upstream, you know? So I think it was a pretty exciting reaction, and
yeah, definitely.
Places like the place we played in Antwerp, like council venues. I don't know if you remember that place.
Yeah.
Remember there were like 20 kids working that night.
Yeah.
And I was like talking to someone else. I was like, are you guys all like working or volunteering? They're like, no, yeah, we work here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a council. It's just like social money. You know what I mean? It's just like good, like socialist dollars going into culture and arts, and I want to call them.
Yeah.
Whatever that venue is called. Or there's a venue called Trix. We've played an amazing venue in Reno, Nevada called the Holland Project. It's like municipal money and stuff. It's like I want to just figure out what's right, and I would love to have some sort of place to house rehearsals, maybe some sort of DIY recording
set up,
some like a demo going or something. You could multi-track on something, or get a MacBook and GarageBand and an interface and some mics or whatever, and then have just like a small space to play and put on shows and just like get kids going with shows or whatever. But we'll see. I'm gonna do some research, and we're gonna have like a show in December. I think I want to invite him out. He didn't end up. He was at Beer Fest. he emailed me back on the weekend though, and said, hey, sorry, I was at Beer Fest. I sort of told him, be right back. I don't know. I think Whitby, it's like just an in-between place. There's 500,000 people in Durham region and no spot. Whitby has 10 hockey arenas. There's like 110,000 people. There's literally 10 hockey arenas. No all ages, like community, arts, media, music space, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like just figuring out, like, can we with some help?
Yeah, like that's the thing. Yeah. It is doable. And I think look at Sweden and look at the amazing amount of bands that came out of there in the 90s that had access to these state funded venue rehearsal spaces and sponsorship for tours. Mm-hmm. And then you've got like, you know, Entombed, the Cardigans, Refuse, like, you know,
straight up.
Name like another non English speaking country that's produced that many, you know, important bands that have ranked internationally.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think these types of things are necessary and like
big time.
You know, like I'd love seeing downtown Toronto too.
Oh, it's true. Oh, I know.
I don't think the mayor's going to write me back.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Hey, Don Tor. Yeah, hey, Don
Tor. I met him one time.
Oh, did you?
I moderated the debate.
Oh, right. Oh, and yeah.
So, did not ask me for my number.
Right.
He wasn't like, yeah, we should stay friends.
Right. You know? I see.
Like, let's stay in touch.
Yeah. But yeah, Toronto's gone through some changes.
Yeah, we've gone through some shit.
Yeah.
You know,
last bit.
I think the whole province is, though, now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reality of the world we're in now.
Right.
But, going back to where you were at, where did you kind of go from, you know, this underground operation stuff? Where did you hear about Protest of the Hero first? Was it just locally kind of legend, or is it, like, through the punk show, or...?
It was mystery, man. I wasn't allowed to watch the punk show. I grew up in, like, quite a religious home. I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons, you know. I think we were barely allowed to watch Power Rangers. You know what I mean? So it's like, we weren't allowed to watch much music by any means, but we taped it low key and we like, you know what I mean? Like, so we, it was just, I found out about Protest the Hero either through my older brother or through Luke Holland, my friend that was into Blink-182 and Protest the Hero. You know what I mean? Like, and played, he's the one guy in my elementary school that played guitar. And so I think it was just through that. And then, but it was like Anderson was up on the hill, right? This high school, and I was in elementary school, and Protest the Hero went there.
Yeah.
And it was like murmurs of their drummer, Mo Carlson. I remember it was like, I heard he wore the same t-shirt every day because somebody said he wouldn't. You know what I mean? Every day for a year. Every day for a year because someone was like, you're not going to do it. And he did. So that type of like murmurs.
Legend. Yeah, local legend.
Legend of Protest the Hero. And to think, you know what I mean? They were, it sort of became, they became gods in my head.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You were like, well, yeah, like it's like the first band you're into.
Yeah. And then.
So where were you hearing music if you weren't allowed at home? Is it just through friends? Like, where were you becoming aware of it? Like, were you listening to like alternative radio maybe? Or
I had a Walkman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had like a Walkman and, it was like the era of burnt CDs. Mm-hmm. So homies would like hook it up. You know, they'd like get it off of Kazaa. I had an eMac, like a computer. I used to be heavy into. I shot a skate video in grade 7 and put it out in grade 8 called B-Man's Video. And so I had like an eMac hooked up to the internet. I'd claim that I needed these songs like for my videos or whatever to put. And my parents were like, oh, that's cool or whatever. And so, I was just pumping Kazaa and just downloading, and I probably had like 5 gigs on some computer filled to the brim with music that I was just like finding out and sampling. But I'd sample music by downloading it was like, you know, those old files, it's like entire discography.
Yeah, the entire bands. Everything the band ever did.
Yeah, so it was like a lot, it was quite dense to like, you know what I mean? I was like 11 or 12, like, I was like, whoa! But, so I was just hearing, and I remember though seeing the threshold of like fame to me was like I found Protest the Hero on Kazaa.
Yeah.
And I was like, I cannot believe they're on here. You know, and it was like, wow.
You made it when you're bootlegged.
Yes.
That's how you know you got it.
Yeah. So I heard of them, and then I just sort of, and then to be honest, I saw Pulmonary Archery on like Sunfire on Much Music. I remember in grade 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, was the first time, like, seeing something just on TV. Like, it was just, like, George running. That video is him running around long hair. He's, like, literally running for the full song back and forth in the room, yelling. And I don't know if the fuck you part on that. I think Much Music, it was so inaudible or whatever. Yeah. It was like, I'm yelling at it. That, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure they kept it and it blew our minds, you know, or we knew, like, he says, fuck you here. And we were just like, damn. So that, I think, I saw that in grade 8 and we were obsessed. We had it taped on a VHS tape or whatever. And we were like, could not believe that that was on Much Music. Cause they would play it at like 5 o'clock or whatever. I'm pretty sure just among whatever else was going on Much On Demand or whatever. And then it was Alexis on Fire, and to us, it was just totally like breaking out of this homogenized, you know what I mean? Like Much Music, like this like one thing, and it stood out to us. And that was my first like actual concert. I'd been to the Polish Hall, I'd been to the, you know what I mean? The Dungeon once maybe or something. I'd been to some Legion show or something with my older brother. And
who played that?
What's that?
Who played that show?
Like at a Legion?
Yeah.
Just like local. Okay. There's like, just like local teenagers. Like just like, teenagers rented the Legion so that they could play or whatever. Okay. You know, my friend Dan LeDuc had stuff and, I'm trying to think then. I think in 2004, it was like the Cool House and the Constantines played with Alexis on Fire. And I found the Constantines, found You remember Sleeper Set Sail?
Yeah.
I kind of like went into this like emo, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I sort of like introduced to a bunch of different things via that show even. Cause I was like, it was just the first like big sound or actual just not Long and McQuaid rental sound show I'd ever been to. I was just total stimulation, you know, mm-hmm. just like being at the cool house. And,
did your parents drive you or did you have to take the train in?
No, my hockey coach and my current best friend, the best man in my wedding.
Yeah.
We went and my hockey coach, Don Brown, drove me and knew, okay, we got hooked up. We got hooked up because he knew some guy that was a bouncer at the cool house.
Okay.
And he let us in early. And I remember watching Alexis like walk around, and I was just like a kid in the corner being like, wow, you know? So yeah, that's yeah. the con, like, and we met Dallas. Like, we met Dallas and asked him for his autograph on like a hat I had or something, you know, like.
Was he cool? Did he sign it?
Yeah, totally. Okay,
so could have gotten broke either way, I guess.
Right, true. Yeah. we were just like booger nose. Like, you know, yeah, I was literally yeah. like, yeah, grade 8. Yeah. And it was, so that was kind of my intro into just like at least like subculture, mm-hmm. you know, and then just like MySpace sort of happened and kind of got into that. And then, yeah.
Alexis has like always been a cool band for just like, I don't know, repping for like other bands. You know, like they've always picked cool bands to open, and you know, and it isn't necessarily the most commercial or the most, you know, I imagine what the record label's pushing them or mm. what different people around them are pushing them to do, like stuff that they like.
Mm. Yeah, it's yeah. I felt I'm so grateful to have felt their support.
Same
like,
here.
It's so yeah, for sure.
100% with us too. Like it's like. There's just so, like a whole wave of people that probably would not have heard of our band
Damn.
Without that band, mm. you know? And it's just, you know, like, and they, you don't have to,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing.
Yeah. Like they are definitely fans and listen still to new mm-hmm. shit or whatever. And you can tell and they keep up and, yeah, it's sick. I mean, they're massive. They're yep. so big and, so important to so many people, and so to have sort of a cosign or whatever it might be like that, or just has been massive. I feel the same way. It's like even that London show or whatever, and they at our Deathless like release show, they were like, can we, they were like dropping a single that day. I got yeah. this email, dude, we had finished our tour in February or January, February. And we're like on our way home, and we were in Paris. We had to get the van back to Paris.
I remember you guys drove back from Portugal or where were we?
We were in Prague.
Prague.
Vienna. Vienna.
Oh, yeah.
Austria, we drove yeah. Vienna to Paris after. We did more dates with Dilly Dally. Yeah,
yeah.
After. And so I was exhausted. I drove.
Can
yeah. Jeremy and I drove and split this 12-hour drive or whatever it is, and we had to get to the airport to get the rental back and blah 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 blah. And I was like, okay, I'm ready to sleep. And then Joel emailed and said, hello, I'm Joel, I'm in Angel X on Fire, they're dropping a single on February 15th or whatever it was, and we're wondering if you're up for it, if like they'd be down to come play like a surprise few songs after your set. I was like, I'm not gonna sleep now. I was like, I cannot believe that. I was like, and I don't know if they, I mean, they know now and whatever, and I've probably punished them a bit with telling them some of what I just told you.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know what I mean? This was my, so I don't know, that just, yeah. That shit, I couldn't sleep. I was at the airport, I was ready to sleep on this concrete floor. I was excited. And yeah, I didn't sleep, and then it happened. And truth be told, we were playing the record front to back, and we hadn't jammed two or three of the songs. So I was tripping. I was like, are we going to actually do it? And we played it front to back for this film that I'd shot with my friend Justin Singer. And I was just like, are we going to be able to sync it up? And then a snowstorm happened that week. We weren't able to jam. We jammed the day of, like, 2 hours before. Like, doors were open, and we jammed for the first time for that show, like, front to back. And so, anyway, I was just tripping on so many levels that we were going to fuck up in front of, like, a bunch of our heroes, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, anyway, it was crazy.
Yeah, like, what was, I guess, going back to, like, when you saw that Alexis on Fire show, like, where'd you go from that point? Like, where'd you go, like, locally? Did you decide you wanted to do music at that point? Were you playing music at this point? Were you doing that?
Yeah, I was kind of in sort of, like, these, like, subversive, like, pop projects. And, okay, like, experimenting with, like, electronic and, like, auto-tune, to be honest.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, and
what do you mean? Yeah. Keep it in there. What are you talking about? So, no, we can't do it.
But, yeah, and I kind of went that way.
What was the vibe of these bands, like, these groups? Yeah, yeah.
Well, I started doing that.
Yeah, these projects.
I started doing that, and I kind of wanted to make, like, this, like, pop, like, this, like, very pop, sensible thing that challenged and, like, subverted punk, like, punks, you know what I mean? Being like, we like the same thing or whatever, I can fuck with that, but do you like this too? You know what I mean? Yeah. Just sort of this, like, MySpace thing, and it was in, like, 2006 or 7, and I was using that same Emac that I was, like, doing video stuff on to create this music, and I hope nobody looks this up, good God, and I'm like... But it was, like, just straight, like, it was cool. More up the middle than I probably even intended for it to be. There's just, like, no angle on it whatsoever. But, and truth be told, and I'm not trying to start anything, because when I open this venue in Whitby, I want them to come play. But Protest the Hero found it and commented on my MySpace, just found this. Just found out about you today. Quit your life.
Whoa.
I was 16.
Damn.
So, yeah, no beef. And I say it by way of forgiveness, and maybe they were young too, but I was like, damn, that hurt. That was,
I,
like,
could totally understand.
Yeah, I just felt fucking kneecapped by them that day. But anyway, I didn't quit my life, but I quit that project. Wow. Shortly after. And
you played out with it, or is it just strictly for the web?
No, I played. Yeah, I played, and I did that for a bit. I played with, like, sort of, like, emo. I ended up playing with sort of, like, more emo projects, like this band These Silhouettes.
Mm-hmm.
And never played The Dungeon with that, but played, I don't know if you remember, there's a place, Johnny B's, in the AMC Theaters Plaza.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I ended up playing there, and, yeah, anyway, I can't believe we're even talking about this on that, because, no, but I'm not saying the name. I'm not saying anything.
I know, you're, like, really,
I'm just like, goddamn, but that's where I went. I was in projects that way. I was in kind of, like, mellow sort of, like, singing projects, you know? Like, I just had these lyrics and just wanted home for these lyrics. I'm sort of the same way now, you know what I mean? It's just, like, just inspired by these projects I was hearing and wanted to see if I could do something like that. Obviously, it's just a typical or whatever, but
so is Chastity, do you think, just, like, the evolution of this kind of, like, project-based approach to songwriting?
Yeah, I think so, and I sort of see it as, like, this ultimate, because it's sort of, like, a video project for me, too, and this, it's just sort of, like, a multimedia sort of project and, like, an internet project. It's like a music project, and these songs are the personal and, like, the deep and the lyrical sort of aspect of it, but I kind of want to, like, show it in the way that I sort of see it in my brain or something, and I think it has become that evolution, and I'm here now, and it's the name that I've got or whatever, and it's what I'll do everything under. So I think Chastity is where it ended up landing. But
so do you write stuff ever that's like, you're like, this is for another project for another time type thing, like, this wouldn't work for Chastity, like, this is for something else I'm going to do?
I sort of Yeah, I do, yeah. But even then, now, like, I'm writing new shit for Chastity right now, and I'm wondering, because I just changed, and I'm just going through this real time. The sound sort of did evolve another way, and I sort of did it. I turned my vocals up a bit or whatever, and I kind of, like, got some clean a bit. I recorded it all at the same studio as the thing, and recorded it all with the same people, and whatever. I didn't think it was that different, but it turns out the review is in. And I guess it's quite different. I was like, yo, I can just... So now I'm kind of going this other goddamn way, LP3, and I'm... Anyways, I'll do what I want ultimately, but I'm like, just like fucking...
Well, it's so funny because, like, you know, like, obviously the intention of the artist don't matter in the end because it's totally how people receive it, but, like... It's amazing when you make something and people receive it completely wrongly. Like, you're like, no, but that's, like, not at all what I meant.
Yeah.
Like you need to think about it this way and look at it this way.
Right.
Like, it's just such a, I don't know, like, it's just, it's especially, like, especially when it's, like, it affects your career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people's interpretation of what you do.
Yes. Yeah.
It's such a weird thing.
Yeah. I think, like, the vision for me on this record is, like, could I sing softer songs about, like killing Klansmen and, like, you know what I mean, going after cops or whatever? Like, and I kind of, like, the vision was just that. And then I think it sort of has... gone the other way a little bit. I just sort of wanted to sing softer, not yell or whatever. These, like, much harder lyrics than were on Deathlust.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, it was not interpreted the right way. But, or hasn't, I'm in my first week. It came out last week. But yeah, some of the reviews, I've seen some European reviews that have gotten it, and that's been sick, and it's been, there's been some praise or whatever, and but there's some Oscar Wilde quote someone just sent me because I was bummed the other day. Maybe we're like when critics disagree, it's a sign of doing something new and vital.
Yeah,
maybe it's like Oscar Wilde quote. I don't know if it's that new or if it's that vital or whatever, but it was encouraging anyway, and it helped in the moment.
And also, I just like. And, you know, I don't have a single record in this room that won a Grammy. I might not even have a single artist. No, Devo's probably won a Grammy. But, like, you know, like, my record collection doesn't have people that were awarded for the art they made. Yet these, to me, are the greatest records of all time, you know? Like, The Feeders didn't receive any award for Ever Feel Like Killing Your Boss. But whatever it is, they didn't win any awards for it.
Yeah.
And yet it is, like, to me, like, one of the most important records ever recorded.
Right.
So it's this weird thing where, like, I don't know, like, it's almost like you don't want people, like, you, it's like, well, do I want to be Syd Barrett or do I want to be the Carpenters? Mm. Like, people didn't get Syd Barrett at the time, you know? People got the Carpenters.
Right.
I guess the Carpenters are vaguely subversive to me. Maybe they're a bad example, bad choice.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, you mean, like, some sort of retrospective, oh, we slept on that, or we slagged that?
Well, yeah, like, the greatest bands of all time, like, no one liked the Velvet Underground when they were around.
Mm.
No one liked the Stooges when they were around.
Damn.
You know, like, no one liked, like, Love. Love Forever Changes. No one bought that record. That record was, like, a flop. Disaster, right? Like, so, like, are the greatest records of all time the ones that just didn't hit in their time? And yet all these bands would go on to influence waves of artists the next generation, you know? Like, and these are the artists that are the, you know, like, how many more people are influenced by the Velvet Underground than whatever was number one in the charts that week? I should really check what was number one in the charts that week, because maybe it was something super, like, Pet Sounds or something. Yeah, and it's like, wow, a lot of people were influenced by that. But, I don't know.
That's, damn. Yeah. Know? I feel you. And... yeah, shit. Yeah, I'm so real-time stunned by some of the stuff, and I think I am invested in some of the... like, I think I've grown up reading some of these sites and reading and finding out about new projects and whatever by way of reviews sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think maybe I'm just got some like unlearning, but I'm like fans, you know, I've read like Stuart Berman reviews, you know, for a while now. And it's like a trusted thing. And I sort of feel in ways that like, I think some are like, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like I'm a critic, you know, and I apply my criticism first and I'm hardest on myself first and sort of go through this, my own filter and own challenge, you know, informed by whoever it is, like Laura Snapes or, you know, some of these writers like that I've read and disagreed with, of course, at times after hearing, but so I think I'm sort of just like invested in some of these writers, and when it comes back, I'm like, oh shit, I don't know what part I missed or whatever, but at the same time, I walk the line of like, if I'm doing visceral, it's like just visceral subject matter. There's only so much I can control it into sounding some shaped up way. You know what I mean? At some point I need to let it go and roll with it. But I think I'm just struggling and like learning literally today and some of the conversations I had, today, and just with this, I think I was so lucky and I'm so grateful for some of the criticism that Death Lust got last year, mm-hmm. and it was only last year, and now putting this out, I've just, this week is my first week with negative, with like a bunch of, not to sound like a weirdo, but there's just been some, I've just got
kneecapped
this week. Yeah, like, and I feel a little trippy.
Well, also, you get like to be critiqued publicly like that is also, it's not a natural thing to go through. Mm. But to be praised like that's not a natural thing to go through too. So it's like,
good point.
They build you up, you know, just to see the rug pulled out from underneath you. But also, I always think about it like when you walk through like a practice space and there's just how many bands. Mm. Would just kill for the opportunity for someone to listen to them, even to dislike it. You know, like just how many bands are just going to go unheard completely? How many sounds are going to be unheard completely? And just like, you know, like at least there's a reaction.
Yes.
You know, and if it's like, you know, and then depending on what the person who, you know, if it's a person who doesn't like something and they consistently don't like something that you're like, that's great. And then the records they do like, you're like, oh, that's kind of bullshit.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of, I don't know, I find it strangely validating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, oh, well, true. Like, I'm glad you didn't get it. If you got it, then I would have been doing something wrong. Like,
whoa.
I did that wrestling show.
Yeah.
This wrestler, Jim Cornette, mm-hmm. who's like this old xenophobic, like, you know, just, you know, guy.
Yeah.
He hated my show. Hated it. Went on and on about how terrible it was and like, you know, I was a disgrace to the wrestling business, and it was almost like a high five.
True.
It's like, well, thank God you didn't get it. If you got it, yes. I would have fucked up completely.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so maybe like, it's like, oh, geez, it's a good thing this reviewer didn't get it.
Whoa, true. Yeah, that's, I think, in this case, maybe.
Yeah, see?
No.
Back to more positive time.
This is encouraging, though, seriously.
Yeah.
It's perspective and you. Yeah, you're one of few people, you know, that I'm in contact with that has experience with, you know, being, it's just like how many people go on Pitchfork a day. It's like hundreds of thousands, maybe, probably. Yeah. So to experience that sort of like visibility or something and I don't know, I kind of hate it in ways, especially today. You know, like, or especially, I don't know. And so I'm just going through it, and you're one of few, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's very unnatural. Like, that's the, you know, it's like, it's natural to want to make art, you know? But I think to get famous for the art you make, that's not a natural thing.
Mm.
And it's definitely not natural, like, the era we live in where you, to be micro famous, you know, but to be micro famous is like, you know, like you, at a different era, you could just be like a huge local band or then huge in your local scene.
Right.
But now it's like, you know, there's these platforms that look micro, but they are macro in reach and things like that. So it's just, I don't know, it's just changed. I imagine a lot from what it would have been like at a different time.
It's true. Yeah. No, it's true. And Yeah, internet.
Internet.
Yeah.
And internet.
It is.
Yeah. So where did, you know, after that horrible message comment left on your MySpace page by Protest the Hero, where'd you go from that? Like, that must have also, being heroes, like, that must have cut crazy deep.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I don't know. Well, to be honest, from there, I kept making music and I was just constantly writing songs and just writing lyrics on my computer or in my phone or whatever. And, I did that project for a bit longer, and then it ended, and then I went to college for a bit, and just as I was ending that, like in 2015, I guess, like April 2015, maybe, I started playing Chastity shows. So I'm intentionally kind of skipping a whole era. I was gonna be leaving the whole era of that, but I think I just kind of grew into Chastity, and there was a lot of growing to do, and there's just a lot of like conversations to be had. I had to, you know what I mean? I had to see this band on MTV Canada play in a bathroom and have my mind blown. You know what I mean? There's just like instances of like shit, you know what I mean? That I just like, I think just.
Oh, you saw that on TV when that happened?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we had it taped. Yeah, my brother had it taped. Yeah. In 2008?
Yeah, 2008. 2008. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I was sick. I wasn't that the show.
No. But still, but, even that you watched it, because I don't think anyone watched MTV at that time.
No, I feel like we did though. I remember seeing a few artists.
There was some cool shit on there.
There was,
like,
yeah.
I would love. Unfortunately, that archive is probably just forgotten. But there was like everything from like Fall Out Boy to like Sailboats Are White to like, I think Black Ops played on there one time. I remember.
Yeah.
And like Adele, first time Adele ever played in Canada. That.
Whoa.
Was on MTV Live.
Whoa, crazy.
Yeah. At
the old, like, Masonic Temple.
At the Masonic Temple, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, where they pulled bodies out of the floor.
Yeah, Jesus.
According to the legend.
Holy. Yeah. In that same temple, yeah.
Yeah, in the temple there was, like, some of the high-up Masons were buried in between floors. And so when they took over the building, they pulled the bodies out, finally.
What?
Because it was a Masonic Temple and it was the concert hall. Like, right. They would just have the shows in the basement. They would still be doing Masonic rituals on the upper floors. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's apparently haunted.
Mm.
There was, like, all sorts of, like, weird stuff that would go down.
Whoa.
Remember after the Polaris Prize, you would do the press junket in the Masonic, like, throne room, chamber room.
Whoa.
With all the carved things in the wall.
Was it at that or the Carloo when you won?
It was there.
It was at Masonic Temple?
It was at the Masonic Temple still.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And that's where we did the junket. Actually, the only times I've ever been to it, it's only been there. I've never been to it in the new spot.
Oh, true.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, it was definitely.
Did you, did they know you were, guys were, they knew you were going to play the bathroom, but did they know you were going to, like, actually fuck it up?
Yeah, like, the whole day we were, like, in the bathroom fucking it up. Like, they saw us, like, spray painting on the walls. And I remember specifically, like a couple of VJs coming in, and we're like, "Yeah, we're gonna fuck it up." And they're like, "Yeah, go ahead." And we're like, "Okay, it's cool." They're like, "Yeah, we're gonna get a new bathroom. We're getting a new bathroom anyway."
But was it Ben that spray painted something right as the cameras rolled? Yeah,
Kurt
Liz
or something.
Yeah.
But we were spray painting before too, and we also like we were going out and buying crazy shit at like. Like, I had a plan at one point. I was going to fill the sink with lighter fluid and throw a match in it and, like, create, like, a flash pot. Like, but, Jesus. Thankfully.
I think, it could have gone.
Yeah, it could have gone real
brutal,
bad.
Brutal, yeah.
Could have gone really bad.
Like, live on
TV. Yeah, it would have gone. It was so bad.
Shit. That's crazy. That to me is infamous, like an infamous performance, though, isn't it? Like, that.
I don't know. They sent us a bill for $10,000.
They did?
Yeah. But they didn't get us to sign release forms.
Oh.
Because, like, they normally, like, you know, they're just supposed to get you to sign a waiver so they can show you on TV.
Yeah.
And they threw us out before they got us to sign them. They called the police.
Okay, so, but they knew you were going to fuck the bathroom up.
I just didn't think they thought it was going to go that crazy. Far. Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't think they, and I think it just got, it got way crazier than we thought. Like the motorbike stuff, like all that kind of stuff was just like, it just got out of hand.
Yeah.
And like the fire and then like the amps falling and a camera person got injured by the barricade that they put up to keep the people out and stuff. It was just like,
wow.
It's a bad look. And I still see people I worked with on that shoot. Like, and then I started working with that much music. And they were like people that were still pissed at me for that.
They were pissed at you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was awesome.
It was sick.
It was so stupid.
Yeah, it was sick.
Yeah, it was definitely. But like, it's, you know, it's a weird time because like Alexis on Fire was on Much Music. Like we were playing on MTV. Like, it was just this moment where the people that were in places like this had just power to kind of make interesting stuff happen that by right shouldn't have happened. In the case of Fucked Up, it definitely shouldn't have happened. But in the case of Alexis on Fire, like, thankfully it did. Like, you know, one of the biggest rock bands ever from this country coming out of that.
Right. Fucked Up, though, is too. Like, is, like, not rock, you know what I mean? But, like, are you not the... Not to butt kiss on a recording, but are you not, like, the best Canadian punk band? Like,
no, Teenage Head.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Teenage Head. And
but are like, you know what I mean? Like,
We have our place, you know, but like, you know, I don't know. It's just, well, like we're talking about, like, it's humbling because, like, you know, like, I was lucky. You know, I was lucky that my heroes were cool when I got to meet them. Like, so when I met Chris Callahan from now Sect, but like, you know, Cursed and stuff, but like back then he was in the Swarm. He was cool as shit. Mm. So he kind of like took me under his wing. So I don't think I could ever say Fucked Up's better than the Swarm. You know, I just don't know like if I could ever bring myself to say that, you know? So I just feel like, I don't know. I feel humbled by, the heroes that came before me in a way that I don't know if I could even like claim to be anywhere approaching them. You know, or like SNFU, you know, like there's just so many bands like that. Like,
right.
I think you know, I'm not saying Alexis on Fire is better than SNFU. And I would say that to their faces. I'm not like, you know, that's not a diss on them. Like SNFU is one of the best bands in the world. But I think by the you know, the metric of sales being biggest, Alexis on Fire.
I see.
You know, biggest.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Would be Alexis on Fire, Billy Talent, Tragically Hip. Who else am I forgetting?
Like rock band?
Yeah. BTO.
Yeah.
You know.
The Guess Who. What about like Sum 41?
Sum 41? I think it was Alexis on Fire bigger.
Oh.
Like, Alexis on Fire did two nights sold out at Molson Amphitheater, right? Mm-hmm. Did you guys play those ones or no? Just the one in England?
Yeah, the one in England.
They played out. I don't think Sum 41's playing Alley Pally right now.
True.
Yeah,
it's true.
Maybe. But I guess record sales wise.
Back then,
yeah.
But, yeah, crazy.
You know, bigger than Gob.
You know, I fucked with Gob.
I fucked with Gob too. I definitely would. But I think Alexis on Fire, you know, bigger than Gob.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, I feel you. Jesus. Yeah.
So what was like when you did Chastity, when you formed Chastity, what was the goal of this group then? Like, was it originally like, I want to make an art project? I want to make something that's just like part of this wave of bands that's kind of happening around me? Or.
I was in. So I went to school in Hamilton and I was back in Whitby. And I think for me, it was sort of loneliness or something in Whitby and just realizing sort of this like thing had passed. I lived in Toronto for a bit. I couldn't do it. I felt really agoraphobic and claustrophobic and stuff. And it was just too busy. It was not what I was used to at all. And I went to school and ended up back in Whitby. And I think I was like, wow, there's nothing. There's nothing, and there's like, I literally don't know of another band out of here, you know, out of Whitby. And I think for me, it was just like, well, if I sing the neighborhood song, will this start something? You know what I mean? And will this, it's like, where are the kids? Like, I had long black hair in high school or whatever. It's like, where are the kids? I see kids with like mohawk still and just like whatever, like lip piercings or whatever. It's like, where do they go? You know what I mean? They still exist. They still like fuck with this stuff on the internet. Do they know? Do any of them know each other? Do they know they're here? And I think that was my feeling, like going back to Whitby and being in Whitby. And I was, I don't know. I think I wanted to, that was sort of the start. And that was sort of like, well, if I just like sing it, and if I, the first song I think is Manning Hill, and Manning Hill is the biggest hill in Whitby where we skate down or whatever. You know what I mean? It was just like literally singing the neighborhood song. And then from there, I think it was sort of, well, I can make a video for this, you know, and just wrote this thing up. And I knew my friend Justin. I still make videos with Justin. You met Justin in Hamilton. And then it just sort of became this DIY project of like a bunch of different shit. And Mark Pesci was like, do you want to, the band Priests was coming to play. And Mark was like, promoting the show at Smiling Buddha and said, do you want to come through and play this? I was like, holy shit. Yeah. And then it just started up and I've been doing it. And yeah, I don't know. It was just really serious, like from the like making a demo, made it like a 3-song demo, put it on a tape and did it. And yeah, I'd sent it to Mark and Mark was like, yeah, do you want to play on the show? And it was a damn sick show. And yeah, it's just been from there.
How'd you get hooked up with Mike Sniper and Capture Tracks?
It's just like through some industry shit. Like the demo had like got, like I was just like mailing demos out and shit, I think, and like, you know what I mean, just handing it out. And burnt, I've always been like obsessed with numbers or whatever, and I burnt 1134 like hell upside down demo, like burnt discs.
Okay.
And just like handed them out and shit. And I was trying to get it going in Whitby, you know what I mean, to hand them out and like leave them places in Whitby. I was just dreaming or whatever, you know, in Whitby. Yeah. But and then industry just started getting smaller or whatever, you know, and it just felt, and I think like, I don't know, someone in the industry just showed Mike Sniper and we're just like emailing back and forth. To be honest, like Sony in the UK, they're starting this I can't believe they're starting a record label that puts out Slayer in the UK and a bunch of bands. And they, it's called something of Nations, Music of
Music Nations. Oh, it's like the old label Music of Nations. Yeah, bringing it back.
They were bringing it back.
Oh, weird.
And this really sweet guy, Joel Diath, or Joel, his last name was spelled Death.
Yeah.
Was gonna sign it, had found Chastity. And I was like, whoa, crazy. But I don't know if I want to sign to a major label and stuff. Because it was just Sony.
Yeah.
Under like a vanity label or whatever, front. And then I think conversations just started. I think I was in a panic and I like had sent, I'd like, I think it, I don't know. I think I just like mailed Mike Sniper. I'd just seen his name, you know, I'd seen it or whatever, and loved shit on Matador and Captured Tracks and whatever. And was talking to, I was just like DIYing it. And I talked to, I forget, Rob, somebody at Matador. I don't know.
Robbie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robbie. Yeah. Absolutely.
He's nice.
Yeah. Super nice. He's not there anymore. I think he's at Secretly Canadian.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like it's wild, like how many interesting projects Capture Tracks winds up working with, like how many outdoor bands, like bands where I'm like, you know, just like it's just such a different approach to making records than like a lot of bands, you know. And I find it fascinating. Just like, it's a really cool label. Like I've always thought, like he's got a really good ear, and the people he, you know, Dave Martin, who's like a fan of the podcast and stuff, the people at that label have good ears and stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's every band they put out, I'm always like, oh, this is, you know, something worth diving into.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I had heard about you before we played with you. The first time we played with you guys must have been not that long after you formed, right? Like that San Francisco show?
Yeah.
What year was that? 2016, 17.
2017.
Because yeah. I was going up the coast to make the wrestling show, I remember. So, right. Yeah.
And you guys were so late for San Francisco show. And we were like, we had heard so much about you, obviously, and we were fans, and I'd seen you play, and but then the sound guy, like, was pissed at us or something?
Yeah, production people at the venue? They're all pissed.
You guys got there at 9 p.m. or something?
Yeah. I was like... Well, because I think maybe I was there earlier, right?
You flew in.
Because I flew in. Because yeah. I had done the Vice Therapy show.
Yeah.
And then flown up.
Oh, yeah.
From L.A. And yeah. got there with plenty of time. But they were, like, so fucking late.
That's when you taped that...
The Vice Therapy thing. Whoa, that day.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. True. Dude, good... For you, for that shit. That's crazy.
The things you'll do for money. But yeah, that was a real gnarly show. But like, God, that was it. So it happened pretty quickly with Chastity, everything, right? Like, you know, like it definitely. Did you know right away that this was going to be something different than other projects you worked on? And when you finished writing these songs?
Not even. I thought, like, I want to make a sick Whitby project. I want to be, like, you know what I mean? And I had, that was, like, sort of my base, like, Protest the Hero or whatever, and seeing what Alex on Fire was to Niagara, St. Catharines, Grimsby, Hamilton, Burlington or whatever, like, just that region. Seeing these, like, sort of regional things, I think it was just sort of a pipe dream of, like, the dungeon, and that still exists for me. Like, and I'm emailing the mayor actively, and I'm talking to Will, the old owner of the dungeon lives out west now and had us for breakfast and gave us all like Tim Hortons cards. You know, it's like that to me, that shit is so encouraging and unreal. And just having him breathe life into this a bit. I think it was just like, I wanted to reach the kids who the songs were written for.
Yeah.
And I think there are like thousands of Whitbys and millions of Skid kids like us, you know, and I think it's like that. I wanted it to reach them because I don't want to sound so cliche or whatever, but it's obviously like it has an effect on music, has an effect on making people feel less alone, obviously, and just hearing themselves in the music or whatever. And I think that has been important to the project, but I don't know. I think I've wanted the project just to be like for the glory of Whitby. And for the glory of, you know what I mean? It's like that's sort of just been the thing. It's like Whitby is all over my shit and it's going to continue to be, you know? And I think, yeah, I was just even like sort of subversive with Toronto even. I put on a few shows at the beginning of Chastity. One was Chastity Demolition. You like Demolition?
Yeah, they're pretty sick. Yeah. Yeah,
Demolition. Jonah did their, I think Jonah.
Jonah Ben, I think, did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Demolition and Wildside, this band Drugs in Japan, and the FNs did it at Shibijibis with Chastity. One of the first shows, and I called it Noe Blanche, because Noe Blanche was like, Scotiabank, and I was like, I was just like kind of making fun of the like Toronto and the industry or whatever. I put on Noshiaga.
Yeah.
I put on a few like no shows, No by Northeast during... North by Northeast, and I would kind of just like I was kind of just like making fun of Toronto, I mean, a lot, like at the beginning of Chastity, to be honest. And I kind of did, like, I was just like, you know what I mean, this is a Whitby project, and I sort of wanted to, yeah, I think that was the beginning of it. And now I'm just like, oh, holy fuck, feel lucky and just I think I'm just in a... I'm not... Yeah, I don't know. I wanted to tour. I want to play the show. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I'm just, like, in a... I think I'm just wide-eyed with the whole industry. Some shit that goes on in the industry, including today. I'm just sort of just, like, wide-eyed, like, and in it now. And but it has... It did happen pretty quick and had the support now in retrospect, like, early on. Yeah.
It's also wild to think that, like, you know, like we talked about all these bands earlier, like Mark Inside or Anagram or even Protest the Hero, like eventually they all moved to Toronto.
Yeah.
Like you almost had to at a certain point, but now because of, I guess, technology and just the infrastructure being what it is, you don't have to. You can still be civic pride in Whitby. You don't have to, you know, eventually move your band to Toronto just because that's where everything's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think it's just, it's like an internet band, mm-hmm. Aren't we all?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like an internet project, some corner of the internet, but it's like geographically based somewhere or whatever. It's weird. Yeah, it's like today is weird.
It's the micro on the macro.
Yes, yeah, straight up. Yeah. But I felt even, we did sort of like an outskirts tour in the fall, and it felt so sick, like just playing, you know, not necessarily the Whitbys, but not playing Chicago. We played like
the suburb outside.
The suburb of it, you know what I mean? We played like Providence, Rhode Island, where people don't necessarily always stand up. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and that tour made me, I tried to do like an outskirts tour. I pitched, you know, in our agent, I was like, I just got a new booking agent for North America or whatever. And I was like, let's do an outskirts tour to like announce the record. But next record I want to do, you know what I mean? I just want to start in Whitby, do a bunch of like outskirts, like drivable outskirts or whatever. They just feel sick and people like come through and are like, yo, thank you for coming. And like, you know, I think that to me, I love that.
NoFX did a tour where like you had to write them a letter and say why no bands ever come to your town.
Wow.
And they did like a whole tour going to like,
whoa,
the like C market type places in every state.
That's
and things
cool.
like that.
That's
yeah, it'd cool. be, you know, because you're right, like these kids still exist. And you know, now it's like you can almost experience subculture completely in isolation. Mm. Like you don't need mm-hmm. to go out and find people to show you stuff, but like that's just as lonely as not finding that subculture at all. Like maybe you feel like you fit in more, but like if you don't have other people around you,
right,
you don't have that human interaction that these scenes did provide people.
Right, right. Yeah. I think there is like a human element of community, like IRL, you know what I mean? And finding community somewhere. And for me, when like community wasn't the church or wasn't hockey or whatever and isn't, for me, like, I think I looked for it, and if I didn't have the dungeon, you know, or if I didn't have, yeah, I just worry, where would I be, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I now I'm thinking, where are they? And they can experience it in the same way that I did, you know, I was 13 when MySpace, like in 2003, you know?
Yeah.
When MySpace came on the internet, and so I was like among some of the first teenagers on social media, you know, and sort of experienced it. And now it's like a hyper mode of that, maybe, and they can, you know, you don't need to do LSD anymore. You can just sit at your computer and go anywhere in the world you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like you can just put YouTube on full screen and go to wherever. But I think there is some just like human emptiness that needs to be filled with community, and I felt it in my life, and I felt it most fulfilled at punk shows, or like just subculturally is where I felt at home the most. And I just feel for it for my community, and like worry about the loneliness mm-hmm. of young people there, you know. So yeah, we've tried to do barn shows and stuff. They've just ended. They ended on Friday. And now it's just like finding a space to hopefully do it. And shit, what did you ask me again? I've just been talking.
No, this has been awesome, dude. Will you come back for part two at some point?
Shit, I would love to.
This has been anytime you want to come up for dinner.
Shit, yes. Well, if you're making chicken, I'll come back through. That was fire.
Any excuse to make the chicken, I'll take it. Sick. So come back.
Thank you, dude. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon, for coming on the show. And you know you're always welcome at our house. And I won't even force you to do a podcast next time. You just come over, you have dinner, hang out. And for those of you who haven't checked it out, Chastity has a brand new album that's incredible called Deathlust. And completely coincidentally, like I had no idea this was happening until it was in motion. But they did a series of videos that actually star my eldest child, Holden. Some of you may be familiar with Holden because he's been on this podcast before. He was the host of the, unfortunately retired, but maybe we'll come back one day, probably not with the same name, but Robot of All Robots podcast and stuff. So he's now, well, not all grows up, but he's a little more grown up and he's in those videos and you can see it. So check out the new Chastity movie videos that are coming out and check out their new record. Like, what a great band. I'm so stoked that he got to come on the show. Well, next week on the show, why don't we keep it current, keep it new, keep it friends. Next week on the show, my buddy, my pal, my fellow wrestling buddy for life, Anthony from Ceremony, is coming on the show for an incredible conversation. This is his first official part one episode. He was on the I don't know if you've heard it, but you should go back in the archives and check it out because he's got incredible stories on it. But the Punk Wrestling Connection Live that I did a year or so ago in L.A., almost coming up to a year ago in L.A., maybe more than that now, however long it's been a while. So you might want to check out that interview with him and hear some of his thoughts about wrestling. But I promise you, no wrestling conversation is hurt in the making of next week's episode. But once again, it's a really honest conversation with someone who pushes the bounds of their creativity and someone who has put out consistently awesome but challenging records for their fans. And yeah, we get into it, you know, and I that's a fun episode. You'll hear next week. But that's it. I'm going to go now and try not buy records. I'm going to sit in this hotel room with the covers pulled over my head so I don't spend any more money. But that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for supporting this show. I'll see you next week. Go out there and make your own culture. Make a zine, make a band, do a podcast, do whatever you need to do. Sign your organ donor cards because that shit works. I've been saying it for a long time, and my uncle recently got a heart transplant, and he's still doing good. And so I really, you know, can't thank people enough that do sign those organ donor cards because you don't need the organs at that point. So just pass them on to someone else, you know, like let someone else have that opportunity. And so, yeah, please go out and do that and stay safe. And I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Love you, everyone. Bye.